Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The U.S. House has passed a spending bill with a sentence that would sideline permitting for the Pebble Mine. It brought the Pebble debate to the House floor, but Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports the sentence is unlikely to become law.
California Congressman Jared Huffman is the sponsor of the anti-Pebble amendment. He says what Pebble Limited Partnership wants to do near the headwaters of Bristol Bay is unprecedented.
There is no other U.S. hard rock mining operation that captures and treats such a massive volume of contaminated mine water, which is harmful to fish and to public health. We know that mines are not invincible. Things go wrong.
Huffman says an accident at the mine could devastate Bristol Bay's valuable salmon fishery, degrade native cultures, and ruin businesses that rely on the region's world-class sports fishing. The Democrats' amendment would cut off funding to the Corps of Engineers to finish the environmental impact statement on the mine. Alaska Congressman Don Young argued against Huffman's amendment, not to defend Pebble, he says, but to support the process.
You're ignoring the science. And you brag about the science all the time. Let the science prove us right or wrong. That should be your responsibility, not saying you're for or against the mine and gives all these doomsday things there. They may happen. If that happens, it will not happen because we'll not issue the permits.
The amendment passed, 233-201. The House then approved the whole spending bill. But the anti-Pebble amendment is unlikely to even come up in the Republican-controlled Senate, which is working on its own spending bills. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
In Alaska, when contamination is discovered on a site, usually it's up to the owner or the person responsible for making the mess to fix it. But what happens when it's not clear who owned the property, who caused the pollution, and who should pay to clean it up? This is the situation in hundreds of places around the state. It's especially a problem in rural Alaska. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Bethel, Rasha McChesney has this story of one rural school district struggling with a legacy of contamination.
Man, what a nice day.
Jeff Harris is the maintenance director at the Lower Kuskokwim School District. He's offered an unorthodox tour of some school district property. Hop into a beefy Dodge truck, drive for a few minutes. Bethel's not that big. And we arrive.
This is the ugly part of LKSD. So we've got more containers, all the super sacks, and these are the fuel tanks that we removed from villages.
Can we hop out?
Yeah, let me pull up.
The Lower Kuskokwim School District is the largest of its kind in Alaska, a rural education area spanning 22,000 square miles of tundra and 27 schools. A lot of times when contaminated junk is removed from one of those village schools, it makes a pit stop at district headquarters in Bethel. The containers that we're looking at now hold the remnants of a Yupik immersion school that burned down in Bethel in 2016.
Mostly this is just contaminants from the fire.
And these have been here for, you know, 4 years since the fire?
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do with them?
Well, it has to go away.
There's another row of shipping containers just like this one a few blocks away outside of the high school. And those have everything from darkroom chemicals to asbestos in them. And Harris says you can't just take all of this stuff over to the dump. It has to be barged out. 3 years ago, he says he shipped one container of dried biosolids, that's code for treated sewage, from a village downriver. And that one shipping container, wedged onto a barge, Tuntutuliak to Oregon, it cost $15,000. Now, facing this long row of containers, the scale of the school district's problem starts to come into focus. The Lower Kuskokwim School District has at least 8 open contaminated sites, all former schools, and they're spread out among hundreds of miles between villages.
So is this supposed to be a semi-permanent solution?
This? No. No, it's all supposed to go away. But where do you make it go away to?
Most of the schools that the state says the school district is responsible for cleaning up, they're old schools that the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs built and then operated before turning them over to the state's Department of Education. They aren't used as schools anymore, but they are contaminated. Usually it's the old tank farms, leaching petroleum contaminants into the surrounding soil. They're rotting in small villages, in some cases near drinking water wells, or eroding into rivers, or just a few feet away from buildings where children are going to school. One of those sites that the state flagged as a high priority for the school district is the old BIA school in Tuntutuliak. It's a short flight downriver from Bethel to the small village and a quick four-wheeler ride over to the Tuntutuliak Tribal Council president's living room.
You want a cup of coffee?
Please.
Henry Lupi has lived in this village his entire life, though he left for a few years to go to boarding school in Oregon. He came back and taught in the old BIA school and remembers when it was closed in the 1980s. The community still used it, though. When the wood came in for a new church, they stored it in the old school to keep it dry. And even now, Lupi says the community put plywood up to try and keep people out of them.
But still, kids get into abandoned buildings. That's pretty natural, I guess.
Lupi has a long memory. So sitting at his kitchen table over the slow tick of his furnace, he talks in detail about the 35-year struggle the village has had over the school. At first, they thought they could reuse the old buildings. But when it became clear that the site was contaminated, Lupi says the village shifted to trying to get it cleaned up.
And the problem at first was we couldn't identify who was responsible.
So the buildings just sit there, rotting, sinking into the marshy land along the Gunnock River. State records show a tangle of people from the federal and state government, village council, the Lower Kuskokwim School District, all weighing in on what should be done with the school for the last 41 years. And at least three times, people have come out to the village to do environmental assessments of the old property. They've found evidence of fuel spills and petroleum contamination, arsenic and chromium. There's asbestos in the buildings. More than a decade ago, the site was added to the state's contaminated sites database. But still, no one state or federal agency took responsibility for cleaning it up. And to understand how a contaminated site in a village like Tuntutuliak might get lost in the shuffle, it's helpful to understand the scale of the contamination problem statewide.
We have about 2,300 active contaminated sites.
That's Eric Breitenberger.
So at any given time, we can be trying to make decisions on a site that's anywhere in the state.
He's been working with the state's Department of Environmental Conservation, specifically with pollution, for nearly two decades. Here's what's supposed to happen when a contaminated site gets flagged for the state. State site managers essentially become detectives, building a case about a site. Who's living nearby? How do they use the site? Who owned it? And how dangerous is it to the people living there? Ideally, a responsible party is found and they pay for cleanup. But there are contaminated sites in Alaska that have been open for 10, 20, 30 years. I asked Breitenberger how that could happen.
Yeah, that's an awkward question. And we spend a lot of time working with sites like that. There are a lot of sites in our database that have been there for a very long time. And part of the reason for that, I'll kind of use an analogy, it's the picking of the low-hanging fruit.
In the case of Tuntutuliak, regulators just haven't been able to pin down who should pay to clean it up. Ideally, everyone that could have some responsibility, that's the school district, the state's Department of Education, and the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs, would get together and negotiate just who should pay for what. But state regulators detail years of reaching out to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and getting no response. So progress stalled. Back in Tuntutuliak, Lupi says it feels like the village is not a priority for the state and federal agencies tasked with environmental oversight. And that feels hypocritical.
Our village corporation has tank farms. And if there was an oil spill, it would be our responsibility to clean it up. We'd be faced with penalties.
And in the end, there's been a workaround in the village, one that doesn't require the school district or the state or the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs to claim responsibility for the contamination. The school district applied for a grant from the Department of Education to expand the new school in Tuntutuliak, and part of that money will go toward cleaning up the old contaminated one, which, by the way, is scheduled to be demolished by 2021, a full 13 years since it landed in the state's contaminated sites database. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Bethel.
And finally, residents on an Arctic Norwegian island with 69 days of constant sunlight in the summer, so they want to go time-free and be more flexible with school and working hours to make the most of the long days. Resident Kjell Uwe Fading says people on the island of Samaroy, north of the Arctic Circle, should get rid of traditional business opening hours and conventional timekeeping because the sun doesn't set from May 18th to July 26th. Take a look at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-40s. Thursday, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-60s. And that's the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea.